Hey love, and welcome to the Love Meach podcast. It's a billion podcasts to listen to, and the universe guided you right here to this one. It's 8 billion people in the world, yet you met me, and that is not by happen chance. This is a divine meeting, and may we guide each other well. I am in this world, but I'm not of it. On this podcast, you'll hear topics about both worlds, spiritual and earthly. My goal is to keep learning, evolving, and spreading love. Welcome to another podcast episode of the Love Meach podcast. I'm at Walmart waiting for my tire to be changed. I can't believe this is going to be like a hour and a half, 2 hour job. But let's be productive while we wait. Now, I was so cold this morning, but the sun is out and it feels amazing on my skin. And so I am thankful for that. So on today's podcast episode, as you guys know, I am on my way to Dr. Jackson. This is the second class that I'm in that I just wrapped up, and I submitted my paper. I do believe I'm going to finish out with the A. I'm just waiting for one more assignment to be graded, and then I will update you guys on that. Now, I'm usually a C student. Like, if I pass, I pass. We are happy for that. But so far, I have been holding on to an A, so I'm super excited about that. So on today's podcast episode, I wanted to read my paper. If you guys have been listening for a while, you know I have updated my nationality to Native Indigenous to this land. My grandmother said that I am a Cherokee. We have Cherokee in our blood. We are native to this land. Of course, there was probably mixing with African, so I respect and admire both lineages. And it's just crazy that ever since I was a little girl, nobody wants to talk about how there were Aborigine natives here already living and thriving in kingdoms and queendoms before, you know, they were conquered and enslaved and everything else to where we are today. No one wants to really talk about it. But I'm not going to forget, and I'm not going to let my kids forget, and whatever, to the end of time. So, I did my paper on repairing the past, exploring reparations for African American descendants. So, I'm going to go ahead and begin. It is with great honor that I composed this research paper today in honor of my Native and African ancestors. Monday, October 9th is the federal holiday of Columbus Day, what several states and cities have now recognized as Indigenous Peoples Day. Indigenous People Day celebrates the native inhabitants of a region or environment, emphasizing their historical and culture significance. It acknowledges the people who have lived on the land for generations and sometimes referred to as Indigenous people. In many Native American cultures, the Native American continent is known as Turtle Island. This term holds culture and spiritual significance, reflecting the deep connections Native American communities have with the land. Black Indians are individuals who are Native American by culture affiliation and community association, but also have significant African American heritage. Historically, some Native American tribes had close ties with African Americans, especially in areas where slavery was prevalent. Members of the 5 civilized tribes were known to hold enslaved African Americans in the Southeast, and some enslaved or formerly enslaved individuals migrated with them to the West during the Trail of Tears in 1830 and later during the Indian Removal. In more recent times, controversies arose as certain Native American nations, such as the Cherokee, Creek, and Seminole, tightened their membership rules. They sometimes excluded freedmen, African Americans who were previously enslaved by these tribes, if they did not have at least one Native American ancestor listed on the early 20th century Dawes rolls. These exclusives were challenged in the courts, citing treaty conditions and possible inaccuracies in the rolls as reasons for reconsideration. Since I have both African and Cherokee ancestry and am currently pursuing a doctorate degree in statistical leadership, the idea of reparations for African Americans strikes a chord with me. I have spent a lot of time at school thinking about leadership, since I believe that the most influential leaders are the ones who aren't afraid to take on the toughest problems. The question of reparations for African Americans is one example of such a difficulty. One possible argument is that African Americans learned valuable life skills during their time in slavery. That pissed me the fuck off when I heard that. Let me just say that. But let me go ahead and continue. Some people may even call for the destruction and prohibition of publications that expose the ugly truths of our country's past. But the fact remains that from 1619 up to the Civil Rights Movement, individuals of African descent were subjected to enslavement, violence, genocide, sexual harassment, and economic inequalities in the United States. Unfortunately, this form of institutional racism still has repercussions in modern society. In light of this longstanding injustice, it is crucial that the federal government of the United States acknowledges its role in the oppressions of Black people in the past. In 2019, the NAACP proposed reparations as a means of recognizing and repairing the harm done in the name of the United States government. These are the only steps that will lead us to a more equal and just future as a nation. Historical background. Injustice and longstanding effects permeate the history of slavery in the United States. Slavery was a cornerstone institution that bolstered the American economy for 250 years from the earliest colonial times through the middle of the 19th century. After this extended time of slavery, the victims endured decades of racial prejudice and segregation. Union General William Tecumseh Sherman issued Special Field Order Number 15, 1865, a year after the Emancipation Proclamation had declared the freedom of enslaved people. Freed African American families were given plots of land of up to 40 acres and a mule to help with agricultural reform as part of this decree. Even after the Civil War, there were still obstacles to establishing racial justice, as evidenced by President Andrew Johnson's rejection and reversal of Sherman's decree. Now, I think it's quite comical that something could be put into law and taken out like just like that. So now when I think back to history, Lincoln was assassinated for this very reason. Like, the more you learn, you just go back in time and you can put the motherfucking pieces together. Okay, so the moment he was assassinated, the next president in line did what? Revoked the same thing that he signed into law. I just find that comical. And I mean not comical. The order of the commander of the military division of the Mississippi, dated January 1680, 1865, granted certain rights and privileges to African Americans who enlisted in the military during this time of upheaval, including the ability to settle their families in designated settlements, acquire homesteads, and engage in various economic activities without losing their claim to land or other benefits. Although this was a monumental achievement in the fight for African American civil liberties, it did not eliminate the underlying causes of racism and inequality. So you mean to tell me African Americans signed up for wars that had nothing to do with them and died, D-I-E-D, on the field, or promised land, you know, because I'm going to fight for something, like, what's in it for me? Oh, you mean tell me that if I fight this war and I end up surviving, I can come back and get some land and me and my family could grow? Okay, bet, let's sign up. That's why so many of them signed up. So we completed our part, right? But then they go back and rescind the very thing that we signed up for. But can we go back and, you know what I mean? You know, are we able to go back and not do the war? No, because it's already done. Like, I don't like sneaky shit like that. Like, so, and we just need to pay attention to that. Don't sign up for something where you do yours first and it's done and there's nothing you can do about it, and then the other party can come back and be and change it and say no or whatever. Like, what kind of crap is that? Like, why would you even agree to that? Like, they should have asked, like, how do I know that once this war is over, like, you're not gonna take this land back or you're not gonna lie? You know what I mean? Like, we were just bamboozled. Like, ugh, history sucks. Okay, let me keep going. Slavery prejudice and failed attempt of land reform all have lasting impressions on the United States, as Ta-Nehisi Coates so equivocally put it, until we reckon with our compounding moral debt, America will never be whole. The wrongs have been done to African Americans in the past and they continue to have effect today. So it's important that we make a concerted of all out effort to right these wrongs. And I agree with that. And again, if you go to the end, it's a paper, so you can't see, but on one of my sources, it lists all the reparations in the world, not just America, not just African Americans, but every every incident that was war and there were reparations, they listed it. And they told you how much the people got, you know, and what was put in the record book, yada, yada, yada. And it's pages upon pages. And we, and when it comes to African-American, you see what we try, but it's never granted. So you'll see Native Americans granted, you know, Jewish granted, you know, all these other races granted. But us, it's like, plea, and never granted. Like, that shit is so upsetting. Okay, so let me continue. Previous reparation efforts and apologies. African-Americans in the United States must be compensated for past wrongs if equality is ever to be achieved. There has been a long-standing understanding of the need for redress, as seen by previous reparation attempts, including the Black Manifesto of 1969 that calls for $500 million in reparations for mostly white religious organizations for their past in sustaining slavery. Setting a precedent for recognizing and compensating for past wrongs, the Civil Liberty Act of 1988 offered $1.2 billion and an official apology to Japanese Americans who had been detained during World War II. To remedy past mismanagement of tribal lands and resources, the United States government settled with 17 Native American tribes in 2016 for $492 million. These instances highlight the need to recognize and correct past wrongs. A commitment to addressing the inherent cruelty and brutality of slavery is also shown by ongoing initiatives like the measure introduced by Congress John Conyers in 1989 to establish a commission to explore reparations for African Americans. States like California have been active in recent years by passing legislation to establish task groups to investigate reparations for African Americans. To further combat institutional racism and advance Black economic growth, localities like St. Petersburg, Florida, have passed reparation schemes. These efforts highlight the crucial importance of reparations as a means of bringing about justice and equality for African Americans in the United States. Presidents, popes, and the United States government have all issued statements of regret for the immortality of the slavery's past, recognizing the gravity of the government's conduct and the anguish that it caused. President Bill Clinton made a heartfelt apology to the survivors of the U.S. government-sponsored syphilis test in Tuskegee, Alabama, in 1977. He said that while words could never make up for the pain and loss felt, it was necessary to speak up about the disgraceful nature of the research conducted in Tuskegee. In 1985, Pope John Paul II extended a sincere apology to the people of Black Africa for the role that white Christians played in the slave trade. This public expression of regret acknowledged the complicity of some Christians throughout history in maintaining the slave trade. And y'all don't even want to hear my point of view on Christianity, but a lot of churches, a lot of colleges, a lot of hospitals, like, everybody had their hand in the pot for slavery. So at the end of the day, if they were to give reparations, they all would have to line up and pay. And I think that's why they don't want to, because it will be the United States of African Americans. That's what it would be. But let me continue. U.S. House Resolution 194 and Senate Concurrent Resolution 26 were landmark pieces of legislation passed in 2008-2009 that formally apologized to the African American community for centuries of brutal dehumanization and injustices. These resolutions intended to show regret and determination to make amends for the injustice done to African Americans over many decades. These official and public expressions of regret for the wrongs of slavery past show that society as a whole understand that these wrongs must be righted. So since they understand, why isn't nothing being done about it? Slaveholders in Virginia used a formal procedure called monunciation in the 18th and 19th century to liberate the slaves from legal obligations. According to the Langley, Virginia had the most documented cases in the country, with at least 5,000 documented cases and an astounding 20,000 slaves winning their freedom through this means. Now, I go to Liberty University, so I emailed the guy because he's doing this research, because I already asked them why y'all didn't celebrate Juneteenth. I already asked them, since he wanted to do all this research, did they have a part to play in slavery? Because a lot of colleges, they're giving free tuition to African Americans and stuff like that, because when you dig through history, you'll see where they owned slaves and different things like that that helped the school, you know, grow money and yada, yada, yada. So instead of answering my question, they're going to say, oh, we're researching where Virginia freed a lot of slaves. This is great. Thank you so much for doing so, especially with it being a Christian school. Like, thank you. you know, you guys aren't making God look bad. Because a lot of times it's like, you're Christian and all the atrocities that you're committing, like, there's no way I want to be a part of your religion or go to your so-called heaven because you're demons. So to see someone actually living a more faith, I don't even want to give it a name, a more faith-filled life, that lightens up my heart, my soul, or whatever. So since you want to point out that over 20,000 slaves were freed, how many were there in the actual state? How many were there in the actual city? Because people want to throw out numbers, but what if there were 1 million slaves and you only freed 20,000? When you hear that number, that means nothing. That means shit. But let's say it was 20,000 slaves and you freed all of them. Okay, great. You let them all go. So don't throw out numbers without us knowing the whole picture. And he has yet to email me back. And I'm about to send another email to the president of the school since he don't want to respond. And we'll see if he responds. Okay, because one thing I learned, it's not about what you ask, it's who. You got to get to the right who to get your question answered. Okay, so let's see. The deed of emancipation from John and Edward Lynch to a guy named Bob, and that wasn't even his name. Just think, if you're African, you come from an African culture, and they're going to rename you. So even though I'm free, I don't even know. Do I remember my parents? Do I remember my grandparents? We probably sold so many times. Do I remember my country? Do I remember my native? Do I remember the foods that we were supposed to eat to sustain our bodies? All he got is freedom and Bob. It's like they stripped us of more than just being slaves. It's your heritage. It's your roots. You cannot know where you're going unless you know where you come from. That's what they took from us. But anyways, goddamn Bob. It's crazy because my uncle's name is Bob. Okay, so Bob is a powerful illustration of this practice. John Lynch and Edward Lynch earnestly admitted this act in court, demonstrating their free will in releasing the slave known as Bob. Some slaveholders, even in a society built on slavery, eventually acknowledged their slaves' humanity and took it upon themselves to help them achieve freedom through this practice known as manumission. So, impact on health and well-being. Slavery's legacy of poor health for African Americans is profoundly distressing. Although the African slave trade was officially abolished in 1808, the brutality towards black women continue in the form of rape and other forms of sexual coercion by slaveholders. So check this out. Slavery ended, which means no more slaves are coming in. But slavery didn't end as in let them free, right? So what did you do with the slaves that were already on your plantation? You forced them to reproduce. Like, I remember researching, it took me so long to do my papers because when you read these peer-reviewed journals, they're like 23 pages long. I'm not going to just skim over that to find a source. I read the whole thing and I save it for podcasts that I'm going to do, for books that I'm going to do, and different things like that. Like, I save them because once I'm no longer a part of this school, I no longer have access to that library, to those journals. They charge you for every single one. So while I have access, I'm doing my due diligence with saving them. So it just takes me a little bit longer. But what I remember reading was, like, they would tell the women, like, if you give me 15 babies, I'll let you free. So they want to tell us, oh no, you're turning 30. Oh, you hurry up and have kids. That's a lie. Those slaves were in their 40s, 50s, and 60s still having babies. Okay? Because they promised them freedom for so many kids. Now, it's one thing to have a big loving family. That's a beautiful gift from God. Y'all know I feel like children are a gift from God. But you mean to tell me I'm having kids knowing that they could be raped, tortured, hung, and sold? Do y'all remember Beloved when she killed them babies? I find it hard to believe that I would willingly bring babies in this world if it's a reality like that. I don't care if you did promise me freedom, because why does it kept? You promised 40 acres and a mule and we have yet to receive that. So again, I give you these babies up front and then you can renege on my freedom. Like, why do we agree to shit like that? Like, we do our stuff 100% up front with the promise of something at the end. What is a promise? It can be changed. It's no good. Why would you agree to something like that? Like, I need my contract in writing and I need you to, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even think I would want to bring babies into this world. You know, he will call you to his room at any time. You got to do what he want to do for him and his guests, and you might be sold and sent away, and I know that's why there's trauma in African American communities, because mothers literally sold their daughters. You know? Like, how, maybe not our generation, but for my grandmother is 77. I wonder, what does she know? What does she remember? Does she remember her mother having babies and selling them so that they could eat? You know what I mean? It's just sad. Let me continue. So the impact of health and well-being. Slavery's legacy of poor health for African Americans is profoundly distressing. Although the African American slave trade was officially abolished in 1808, the brutality towards black women continue in the form of rape and other forms of sexual coercion by slaveholders. The systematic effort to degrade Africans in order to legitimize slavery and the subsequent segregation of Africans and African Americans has had a far-reaching and far-fetching consequences to their mental and physical health. Per capita, African Americans still have much worse health than whites. Let me say that again. African Americans have worse health than whites. Cancer, heart disease, diabetes, stroke, HIV, AIDS, all more prevalent in this population, illustrating the far-reaching effects of historical trauma. So I either say trauma or we know who they're experimenting on. So stay woke, y'all. High rates of infant mortality, racial profiling, PTSD, toxic exposure, lead poisoning, the leading cause of preventable cognitive impairment and obesity are all disproportionately experienced by African Americans. Lack of education is what I say. These inequalities highlight the critical need to work for health equality and justice and to address the lasting effects of slavery and its accompanying traumas on the health and well-being of African Americans. Universities and slavery, this is what I was telling y'all about. Slavery's historical and contemporary effects of higher education in the United States are manifested and worsened. Many public and private universities, as scholars like Shar Har and Darren L. Baldwin have shown, have a long and pervasive history of relocating African Americans and turning historically black areas into white enclaves. Furthermore, the impact of slavery in the founding and growth of American universities cannot be ignored. Africans held as slaves were instrumental in building these schools and the slave economy and crucial to their continued existence. As a result of this heritage, it is more important than ever to recognize the wrongdoings, make amends, and keep working to address the racial and economic inequalities that permeates American university. So this was only a 10-page paper. I had to take so much out, but the schools were listed. I'm talking about Harvard, Yale, all the way down to where what they did, because when some of the whites went to school, they brought their slaves with them, y'all. And then of course slaves built the buildings, and then, you know, slaves on the campus, and, you know, just whatever. So, you know, they were caught red-handed. You did have, you know, a role to play in slavery. And so what they did was they started to do different grants and scholarships and free school. Like some of these African-American natives to the land, they trace their ancestors all the way back to African-American slaves. And they know what schools they were at. So if you were able to trace it that far back, then the school would grant you free schooling. But how many of us have not done that? So, I mean, you can't deny slavery when their descendants literally know that they are descendants and are living today. Anyway, so this is the next part, the moral and ethical perspective. Martin Luther King Jr.'s statement from 35 years ago exemplified the moral and ethical stance on confronting poverty and racial injustices. He advocated for more than just small adjustments, stressing the need for major shifts in social norms and the revolution of values and the significant rebalancing of political power. This view is consistent with a long history of fighting for fair economic treatment. Similar moral imperatives are conveyed by ancient teachings in Deuteronomy 15:12-15, which place an emphasis on treating former slaves with dignity and respect. It says that if you free a Hebrew slave after 6 years, you should not let him go without generously providing for them out of your own resources. The shared history of servitude and liberation provides the context for this order. The faith-based and historical viewpoints mirror Dr. King's appeal for the radical transformation towards fairness and equality, emphasizing the importance of addressing systematic disparities and injustice. So I had to take the part out where Martin Luther King, after his I Had a Dream speech, he had another speech. And I had it on the other paper, but this is my condensed one, where he basically was asking for reparations without saying reparations. And it's sad that we have to do that. It's sad that we have to, like, beat around the bush, talk around the bush. No, you know exactly what we're asking for. We're asking for reparations, and that is why he was assassinated. So, just growing up, like, why did he assassinate? This man was just so, like, you know, he's asking for freedom and different stuff like that. Like, I don't know. You may have wanted to assassinate him before y'all were able to segregate the water fountains from whites only and colored. You know what I mean? Like, you might have wanted to get rid of him before then, but the damage is done. You know, he did his part. But no, they got him when he started to cross that line asking for reparations. See, he was moving from spiritual to political, and they couldn't have that. So everyone that you can think of that made that change over into the political aspect, they got rid of them. So Tupac was another one. When he went to jail, you know, already he was a part of the family. Shakur, if you just look them up, his aunt, everything. Like, he was already part of the culture. But, you know, you got to grow up, you learn your way, whatever. He's doing his little rap thing. But when he went to jail, those old heads got to him. So he wanted to revamp the Black Panther, you know, and start that over. He wanted to have peace with the East and the West Coast and da-da-da. So they got rid of him, or he, you know, faked his death or whatever. But point being is, the moment you switch from, you know, them using you to make money and manipulate you and stuff like that, and you're moving more to political where all these people are following you, you can really make a change or impact in this world, they will ghost you, okay? Or they'll lie, or they'll say you committed suicide, or you overdosed. Like, all that shit, I don't believe any of that bullshit. Don't, like, even in Orlando right now, talking about this Black girl hung herself. Get the fuck out of my face. I've never known a Black person to even play with ropes. Like, y'all already know that's not even how we roll. I will never believe that. No, we still have racist people today. When I was a little girl here in Jacksonville, Florida, we usually ride up to Callahan and different stuff like that, doing our church conferences, and there was a KKK parade. Confederate flags, white hats with the little eyes cut out, having a full blown out parade. Racism very much still, you know, exists today. I'm 36 today. Okay, that's what I saw as a little girl. Even going to high school, people had a Confederate flag. Like, people can believe what they want to believe. When you go and start getting rid of innocent lives, like, you're taking it from pride to murder, and that's not okay. So anyways, the role of governments and organizations in correcting slavery's historical injustice is complicated. Netshee Taffee persuasively asks, what is owed to the descendants of the people who survived enslavement, sexual abuse, lynching, forced labor, and structural oppression? Many colleagues, universities, financial organizations, corporations, industries, local, state, federal governments were built and sustained by these atrocities. This acknowledgement emphasizes governments and organizations' moral needs to acknowledge their past and find measures to repair slavery and systematic racism's lasting damage. As a presidential candidate, Barack Obama opposed direct reparations and prioritized anti-discrimination. Some support reparations, but others support border racial equality methods, raising fears that reparation could be seen as identity politics. So I guess you can't be Black and go for reparations because, oh no, would that be deemed as racist? No. Why are people quick to holler out, oh my gosh, you're being racist? No, I have pride. The same way all these other races have pride in their cultures, and it is okay for different flags and different cultural clothing and mannerism and food and all the other stuff, is pride on that side. But the moment any Black person does it, it's racism. No, we have pride too. Just because you try to erase our past, our history, our, you know, culture, our dress, our food, we're rediscovering what those things are, and we have pride in them. That is not racism. Okay, so anyways, so shame on him for being a president and not even at least trying to pass reparations. So I don't care what anybody has to say about it. I said what I said. Policymakers, educators, institutions must also acknowledge slavery and racism in American history. Many textbooks emphasize the abolish movement but downplay slavery. To promote understanding and healing, these historical truths must be taught better, and future generations must comprehend how racism and slavery shaped the U.S. As they address slavery and racial injustice, governments and institutions should prioritize justice, truth, and equality. The scope of reparations. So advocates want reparations to readdress the incalculable suffering caused by centuries of slavery, segregation, and discrimination, which caused the oppressed African Americans. Reparations acknowledge severe injustices. They provide redress and they give the aggrieved people closure. Do you know how important closure is? My mom, my sister look at First 48 all the time, and those parents are still calling radio shows. They're still on Facebook hopes, listening for people talking about their lost, missing loved ones. You know what I mean? They will never have peace. They will never be able to have closure until they get that final, you know, whatever. So I finally sent them both one where this man, he got some type of boat and equipment and was looking at the bottom of the lake, and he found like 20 cars. And so over 20 families thought their family was murdered or missing, when no, they, you know, had some type of accident on that road and went into the ocean. And we said to ourselves, like, after all this time, nobody put up like a ramp or something. And that just leads me to question, like, we should be looking at a lot of these rivers and stuff. Like, maybe there aren't like serial killers running around. You know, of course there are, but people could probably just had accidents and their cars underwater, and no one's using equipment to like pull it up. You know what I mean? It's the difference between being like murdered and missing or having an accident in the bottom of the lake. That's two different types of closures those families can have. And they both will be sad, but knowing that my baby isn't somewhere in a sex slave trade being tortured or whatever, or that she died, drown in the car, you know, at the bottom of the ocean, those are two different, you know, closures that you can have. So the scope of reparations. Advocates want reparations to readdress the incalculable sufferings caused by centuries of slavery, segregation, and discrimination, which continue to oppress African Americans. Reparations acknowledge severe injustices, they provide redress, and they give the aggrieved people closure. This comprehensive approach includes property rights promised but never fulfilled. Okay, good. My car's done, yay! Okay, so property rights promised but never fulfilled after the Civil War. Direct monetary compensation, government programs to alleviate poverty and access to education and healthcare, long denied to African Americans. What should have happened in 1865 when slavery ended in the U.S. is still debated. Some think that slavery should have been considered a crime and that those guilty should have been imprisoned and their property distributed to newly freed people who had suffered years of maltreatment. Reparations would have included transferring the land and property from the former slaveholders to their descendants who wrongfully benefited from the past wrong. Some African American own property that legally belongs to the ancestors of slaves. Modern slavery and human trafficking demonstrate the importance of addressing slavery's legacy. These types of oppressions continue to cause victims emotional, bodily, and mental pain, emphasizing the moral obligations to correct institutional injustices. Slavery's effects are far-reaching and lasting, requiring a comprehensive reparations approach that acknowledges the grave harm perpetrated and seeks retribution for existing injustices and historical grievances. Almost done, guys. Recent perspectives on reparations. So Martin Luther King Jr.'s contributions to reparations offer a fresh perspective on material recompense and its significance in democracy. Scholars and the public are scrutinizing King's political philosophy and his view of the relationship between restitution for historical injustices, particularly slavery, and a truly democratic future. Here's the name of the speech. In Why We Can't Wait, released immediately after his I Have a Dream speech, King stressed the importance of slavery restitution for democracy. He correctly notated that African American lost earnings due to decades of exploitation. humiliation and enslavement, King recognized that while no amount of gold could completely pay for the deep-rooted anguish, unpaid wages could be measured and remedied by a huge program of special remedial measures in accordance with common law. They could not have that. Do you know how many people marched with him to motherfucking Washington, D.C.? See, they could not have him. So instead of them blasting that I have a dream, they should be blasting why we can't wait. Okay? This approach emphasized slavery's lasting impact and the need for each reparation. King's plea for a huge reparation scheme reflects current calls for reparation, emphasizing the moral imperative of correcting historical injustice and creating a more just and equal society. It asks us to examine such measures as a way to promote true democracy and confront America's deep-seated injustices, not merely as financial restitution. This is my favorite part. The impact of slavery on various aspects. African Americans' lives are deeply shaped by slavery, which continues to alter society today. David's 2021, I have resources all in here, just trying to skip over them, but that one started out. David's 2021 states that slavery shaped Black Americans' political, sexual, criminal, and cultural identities, as well as their economies. Slaves and even nominal free African Americans were denied political and criminal rights that shaped American citizenship. Slavery rules generally ignored familiar ties, upsetting African cultures and limiting access to mainstream American culture. Enslaved people created a unique African American culture despite their oppression. The U.S. also practiced coercion, sexual and reproductive labor, unlike other New World enslavement nations. Slavery as a sexual political economy dehumanized African women by enslaving them for reproductive to amass money. It's crazy. Despite slavery's grave injustices, the U.S. has not yet committed to the compensation of the descendants of enslaved persons for property theft. And that's why I love being a realtor, okay? Crimes against humanity and human rights breaches. The U.S. government refuses to impose reparations for slaves until 1865, desecrates their memory and legacy. This history highlights the crucial need to acknowledge and address slavery's lasting effects and systematic disparities and injustice. The epigenetic and transgenic effects. Epigenetic research has illuminated slavery's legacy and its effects on African Americans. Nutrition, prenatal stress, and transgenerational trauma has been the main topics of these studies. Grassi of 2020 notes that African Americans who suffered slavery's stress had been studied for its epigenetic effects. The research has also found on prenatal stress passed down from African American women to their children, revealing how epigenetic alterations can pass on traumatic memories. So this is from scientists, you guys. So I know sometimes when I talk, people are like, oh my gosh, she's pulling this butt out of her butt. No, I read peer-reviewed scholar journals. Like, you cannot submit a journal without research. You have to have 100 people, 200 people, 250 people, 500 people. You tell, you know, what you're researching, your findings. You back that up with different facts and, you know, different doctors and scientists at XYZ. It's not just something, it's not like a fiction story that you just make up. It's all research, mathematical, numbers based. So when I talk, I'm talking from this. And it's hard to have certain conversations with people because if they don't know, they don't know. It's almost like talking to a brick wall. But this is passed down. So women, the trauma that you endure. And I saw a picture. Let me give you a picture. There was a pregnant woman. She was holding her belly. And in her belly, you saw the silhouette of the baby. And in the silhouette of the baby, you saw the ovary of that baby. So for three generations, from grandma, mom to you, I'm the third generation. My grandma, my mom, and me. Whatever my grandma went through, my mama felt. And because I was in my mom, I felt. And for me, whatever I'm going through, that's going to be passed down to my baby and my baby's babies. Three generations, y'all. They know this. Okay, so let me continue. Slavery's epigenetic and transgenerational reproductions illuminate African Americans' health disparities and socioeconomic issues. It emphasizes the need to recognize and confront the intergenerational effects of historical injustices, providing vital knowledge for promoting equality and justice in modern society. Oh, no, let me go back. These studies show that epigenome, the molecular layer that regulates gene expression, has a major impact on the health and well-being of people whose ancestors experienced metabolic changes due to slavery, often linked to nutrition deprivation. It's more than that. The trauma she endured by being raped, by trying to run away, by seeing her aunts, uncles, cousins, dad, whoever, try to escape and get hung and get raped. All of that shit, you know that? Therapy should be free for African Americans. I'm going to just throw that out there. This study shows that historical trauma has a lasting impact on African American genetics and epigenetics. Let me continue. Reparations beyond monetary compensation. And this is the end, y'all. Reparations for African American descendants go beyond money. Let me say that again. Reparations for African American descendants go beyond money, because you can give me some land right now. You can give me some land right now, and I will go to junkyards and whatever I need to go to build my tiny house and my farm. Like, I don't have to even be a part of this society. Like, we could definitely go back to how we were Native American. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We were one with nature, okay? Pocahontas, they need to redo all of that. I would love for someone to redo Pocahontas from an African American, Native American viewpoint, because they just stripped us of all we got is Wakanda. No, 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 baby. It goes more than that. It goes back further than that. Most people even say, this is Egypt. Moses said, let my people go. I believe he said, let my people go, as in slaves. What if that was an Indian chief letting his people go across the river for freedom? I don't know. I'm just saying. Anyways, let me continue, because this is the last one. Reparations for African American descendants go beyond money. Repairing historical and ongoing injustices is a multifaceted process. As Nnamdi Taofee 2020 brilliantly explains, it's about fixing the mental, psychological, cultural, organizational, social, institutional, technical, economic, political, educational, legal system, and health issues, not money. Chattel slavery and its remnants cause many injuries, which reparatory justice addresses. Additionally, governments, corporations, industries, religious institutions, educational institutions, private estates, and others perpetrated slavery and its effects. Racial reconciliation, atonement, and reparatory justice require acknowledging, addressing, and redressing these roles. Given this, tackling African American home ownership disparities is crucial. The plan to reassess the housing structure and replace HUD programs with a more comprehensive approach that favors accessible mortgage and inexpensive homes would help reduce housing inequalities. This concept promotes reparatory justice by helping people become homeowners and financially independent. So why would we want to continue to have our hand out? Like, gimme, gimme, gimme. Gimme, 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 gimme. We'll always be dependent on you. That's like giving a man a fish every day. Hell no. Teach a man to fish. Teach a man to fish. By giving us land and letting us be homeowners and letting us have our own financial freedom, they know we won't need them. Tulsa, Oklahoma was not the only Black Wall Street. There was so many more. Riza Islam wrote a book. And if you go back to my podcast, I went over that book. So just go back and listen. He named every city and town that was a Black Wall Street. Do you know they were burned, bombed, or flooded? A lot of our lakes here in America were African-American towns. So explain that. How back then were they able to flood a town and make it water? They been had this technology. So when you see floods and tornadoes and this and that, the hurricane that happened to New Orleans, those are not acts of God. I don't care what these people say. Those are not acts of God. If you go look up Nikola Tesla, he went in the desert, baby. He went in the desert and said, I bet you X amount of dollars I will make it rain. And he made it rain with his machine. He manipulated the sky and made it rain. The same way you could put a pot of water on a hot stove and it will boil and turn to steam, Okay, so you know what it takes. It takes a certain temperature. It takes water. Once that water boils to a certain temperature, it will become steam. Same thing with freezing. You take that water, you put it in a cold environment. At a certain environment, it will freeze. They know how to do this with weather, to make it rain, to make it a hurricane, to make it a twister, to make it flood. Like, we definitely have to wake up. If you don't know that by now, I don't know what to say. Let me continue. Let's see. So corporations and leaders must also go beyond symbolic remarks and actively address the fundamental imbalances. Free credit rehabilitation and home ownership grants can help vulnerable populations. True leaders sacrifice for the greater goods and seek fairness for all. Reparations must be assessed for content, timing, and implementation as negotiations continue. These evaluations should address African American communities' distinct demands. The campaigns for reparations is based on the idea that descendants of enslaved people have the right to right historical wrongs and access possibilities denied to them. In conclusion, restitution involves more than just money. Addressing the past and present injustices need acknowledgement, discussion, and actions. Reparations, justice, and equality require proposals to address home ownership disparities and corporate and lender engagement. So I wanted to do a paper on, as a realtor, when they give us our reports, African Americans are last, I mean dead last for mortgage approval and dead last for home ownership. That does not sit right with me. It's not okay for all of these companies to make billions and billions each year thanking us for being the number one consumers, but no one is scratching their head saying, how can the number one consumers, you know, meaning they work their asses off, they have money, one thing we're going to do, we're going to work and we're going to make some money, but you get denied for a loan, you get denied for a house. How does that make sense? Money can buy you whatever you want in the United States of America. I kid you not. Go look at Scandal. Go look at How to Get Away with Murder. Go look at Suits and all these other shows. They don't do nothing but mimic true cases and shit like that in a fictional matter. But my point being is, as a native to this land, okay, my ancestors were here. I live because my ancestors didn't give up. They all could have tried to run away. They all could have got hung. They all could have got burned. But some of them submitted for the sake of me living. Can you imagine submitting to being raped, submitting to being tortured, submitting to working 6 a.m. to God knows how long, getting a dollar, if that, and, you know, kids being sold and not being able to get married and having to sleep with whoever master tell you to sleep with. Just the whole bullshit, it's all bullshit, but just imagine doing that just so that your lineage could live one day. So because they submitted, you know, a lot of the Africans and Indians would say, you know, we could have fought to the very end and we would have been extinct. Because at the end of the day, steel and those bullets is going to win over any arrow, over any poison, over any axe that you make up. I mean, the bullet is faster. You know, it hits those organs. You bleed out, you die. So they had to agree to disagree. They had to submit. They had to succumb. You know, they had to fight to see another day, basically. And I know that they're turning over in their graves to see what this has come. How can your boat land on a land and say, oh, look what I found? Nah, nigga, you ain't fine. Shh. Like, seriously? This is what our kids are being taught. And now they're trying to take the book. They're so guilty. They're trying to take the books out of the schools and all this stuff and rewrite history. Like, no, you can't. Now we know you're full of S because history is what? Nothing but your story. We don't want history. We want the truth. And our centurions are dying. So if you have any centurions around today, get them to write books or to tell their story, because once they're gone, you know, we can only tell what we know. But the point that I'm trying to make is, as a realtor, my goal is to help, you know, not just African Americans. You know, I definitely want to help everybody. But since we are in last place, my God, for mortgage approval and for loans. Okay, since we're in last place, I want to make a dent in that. By the time I retire, Lord's willing, I want to be able to say I help, you know, maybe 5,000 families. I don't know what's a good number for a lawyer, but so, not for a lawyer, for a realtor. But however many families become homeowners, I want it to be this this insane number. Like, I really wanted to be this insane number that I helped that many families become homeowners. And some of them only want to rent right now, and that's fine. But I keep them in my database so that I can circle back around and say, okay, so you've rented. It's definitely time for us to look at a home. You know, because you definitely don't want to force somebody to do something that they're not ready to do. But I definitely want to let me go, little bird. These birds be owning the darn Walmart parking lot. But I definitely want people to know, like, no matter where you are, you can own a home. Do you know you can have a housing authority voucher and you can partner with Housing Authority in NACA and become a homeowner? Did you know that there is a program called HabitJack that will help low-income, low-credit-score recipients own a home with low interest rates and low down payment amounts? Like, you can have low credit. There's credit programs. You can need down payment assistance. There's programs that help with that. So at the end of the day, the reason that you don't own a home is you have not because you asked not. So start with getting someone on your team. You know, you can hire a lawyer for free. You don't pay us. You guys don't pay us. We get paid at the closing table, you know, once the home is sold by the seller. So you're hiring a lawyer for free. Even if it's a rental, you aren't paying the realtor. The leasing company is. The only time that you will pay a realtor in some leasing aspects, the company doesn't pay. And I do ask my clients if they wouldn't mind paying a small fee. And I haven't had a problem yet with them paying because they just appreciate my service so much. But that's on the rental end, and it's like $50 or $100. But as far as homes, no, you don't pay. So you have not because you asked not. And I just want to scream on the loudest speakerphone that I can. Like, buy a home. Like, why are you paying someone else's mortgage when you could be paying your own? It's okay to do that temporarily, but at the end of the day, don't do that forever. That's foolish. The Bible says, my people perish for lack of knowledge. So you could be having your own mortgage, building up equity in your own home, being able to buy a car, go on vacation, pay for your kids' college. You know, you will have that money for you and your family instead of giving that money to someone else. Make it make sense. So I am, you know, on my way to sign up for my mortgage class, and I'm just so excited to learn and bring it back to my community, because my prayer every single day is, God, send me the clients that you want me to help, okay? It's enough out here for all of us to eat, but I know what my mission and my assignment is. I don't care if it's low credit. I don't care if you need down payment assistance. I don't care if you need time. I can speak to three different people, and one may be ready to buy a house within 30 days. One may need 3 months. One may need 3 years. It doesn't matter how long it takes. The point is, they will all cross the finish line and be homeowners. So I will end with, I hope you guys love my essay. Let me tell y'all, I'm going to tell you why I got to be. I use the NAACP website and other websites, and he only wanted me to use Scholar journals. Now, I did use the number of Scholar journals that he wanted me to use, which was 10, but I found more, and I was like, how could you penalize me? I gave you the 10 that you wanted, and I used others, but he wanted to say it needed to be only journal, and I think that's kind of fishy, because I'm like, are they teaching us to only use information that they give us and not information that we find? I kind of don't like that, because the companies that give us those journals, you have to submit them and they have to be approved. That doesn't mean that that's the only information out there. So it's almost like they're trying to brainwash me into only getting information from certain sources. And I don't agree with that. I really don't. Like, my grandmother is a librarian right now. She could tell me about, just like she told me that I'm Cherokee. That's my historian. I can get information from her, but you're telling me it has to be a Scholar journal. Like, so knowledge is knowledge. I try not to knock no knowledge. I feel like sometimes God can send a message through the devil and people want to close their ears. That's the devil. No, listen to the knowledge. And like the Bible say, judge it by its fruit. Now, if what you hear ain't matching up fruitfully, then you know it was some BS, but I will catch you guys on the next one. I hope you guys are having an amazing day. If not, hopefully the day isn't over. Still give it some time. Pray. Continue to sow good seeds. And in due time, you will reap a beautiful, bountiful harvest. I will catch you guys on the next episode. Bye. Namaste. Love a stay. And always vibe high, babe. Thanks a million for listening. I hope you have a better than great day. I love you. Talk to you later.